uusi episodi, Liukuva Windows. Oma vieras, Sami Laiho. Pidä hauskaa.
This is a pretty global episode because so we're sitting here with the two of us in Greece and me being German, talking to a Finn in English. So this is globalization, isn't it?
Yes.
So welcome to the show, Sami Laiho.
Thank you very much. I'm super happy to be here.
I don't want to overemphasize it and say we're friends for so long, but we know each other, been MCTs for quite a while. And we are working more or less in the same area. We were always interested. I was interested in operating systems. I know that you are. So we had quite a bunch of overlap in our topics. So first of all, what I'm interested in, how did it start for you? How did you find out that you're into the IT business? Maybe it's in Finland, it's too dark and computers are the only valid thing you do.
I actually, my dad used to import computers from the United States to Europe during the 80s. And so I kind of grew up to the business in a way. But I was supposed to be a scuba diving instructor originally. And then I knew computers very well just because of my dad. And then started doing scuba diving and became an instructor, realized that it doesn't pay, came back to Finland, teaching around, especially in Spain, and then got back to Finland, and I actually went to a training center and proposed that I could start installing their classroom computers during the summer as a summer job, because I knew I could do it very fast and I was good at it. So, and then they asked me if I have any certifications for relating to this, so I gave them all my certificates, and then the guy who owned the training center said that the training center manager said that this is actually very embarrassing because I have more certificates than any of their instructors. So if I would rather like to teach than install computers. And then I told them that I've been teaching scuba diving, so I can teach computers as well, I guess. So this was in 2000 or 1999. So that's by pure accident I started teaching computers. But I grew up to living with computers just because of my dad. So.
To wrap up the last decade, you really focused on security. So what I find pretty special is that you're from Finland. From Finland, plus being a security guy, I would expect you to be involved in Linux. So, of course. But back in those days when you started the training company, was it just Windows that was the focus of the company, and and it happened to be like that you started with Windows, or was Windows always your pleasure and you hate Linux or stuff like that?
I grew up with Windows, so I've been an AS/400 operator at some point as well, so I've used other operating systems as well, and I had to learn Linux at school for a brief moment. I think the problem is that people are... I like teaching Windows because most of people use Windows. So Linus Torvalds is Finnish, so of course that should, like, it's just in my neighborhood where the guy lives, so I should be using Linux in a way. But it was the operating system that I started with. I always believed that when the majority of people are using Windows, I should teach people how to use Windows and how to secure Windows rather than using Linux. Linux is more of a bad guy interface when it comes to this. It's used for doing pen testing. It's used for all that stuff. So most of people still use it. Linus Torvalds himself said, he was interviewed and someone asked that what's going to happen in the next decade, for example, how much will Linux have market share for desktops, and Linus himself just started laughing, burst out to laughter and said that, like, Linux is not meant to be a workstation operating system, just forget it. So I was never interested in it that way. I always knew it was meant to be a platform which was more adaptable to smaller machines and different kinds of devices, but I never believed it would be the one that would be used by my students or my customers. So that's why I started purely with operating systems. So my security interest just is based on the fact that security is super easy for me because I know how the OS works. It's the normal problem for everyone is that they start doing security, but they have absolutely no idea how the operating system itself works.
Yeah, that's this is the same way that I describe it, saying I'm a mechanic and I do not decide which cars are bought by my customers. Mm. So if they all use Windows, they come to me, I repair it, I'm doing it. So, and somehow now today, the situation changed because everyone's running Linux in terms of Android devices, and Microsoft themselves are heavily convinced that this is the future, the operating agnostic world. Mm. We hear so often about that. So today we see that it's a combined knowledge. The operating systems are somehow alike and they share the same ideas anyhow. So as a regular administrator that's joining the classroom, listening to one of your talks, and if you're not in the military business and you say, I want to have a safe operating system I can't spend 24 hours a day, 7 hours a week by just securing the operating system. I really would like to ask you, Sami, what's the one tool that I should buy and I'm safe in a regular manner?
Absolutely, you should not buy any software. So the operating system itself, I could say since Windows 8, but now that Microsoft has decided that they hate Windows 8, I'd rather say Windows 10 started this. But if you're running Windows 10, you don't absolutely buy any external software if you are worried about security itself, because you can always buy reactive solutions from any provider, Symantec, F-Secure, whatever you want to use. But those reactive solutions are not the ones that will make you secure. So don't buy external software. If you start with the antivirus engine itself, everyone looks at the comparisons of antivirus engines. They're compared like this month, they change every month, but they say that this month Symantec caught 98% of the malware tested against it. And then here we have Windows Defender that took 96%. And they're comparing these percentages. But what they forget is that currently we find around 300,000 new malware samples per day, which means that if you have a 1% difference in your protection, that means you get 3,000 pieces of malware going under the radar anyway. So there's absolutely, it's just ridiculous using a reactive solution like antivirus trying to protect you, because it won't be up to date. And even if it's up to date, it's still missing thousands of malware samples and it only takes one. So Windows Defender as an engine is totally fine. I have nothing against it. I need some reporting and some alerting sometimes. I have some tips on that on my blog as well. But then that's the only thing that I would pay for, would be alerting and monitoring. The engine itself is perfectly fine for securing you. And when it comes to a administrator of a very small company or a guy or girl who's protecting their own computer, you don't need the reporting centralized, which means you're just fine with what you have. So Defender will be your, because that's the first thing people always ask first, is the antivirus.
I'd like to add one thing. There was quite a popular article from a guy who happened to be a developer at the Mozilla Foundation, one of the Firefox guys. After he quit the job, he wrote a very detailed article about how lots of other anti-malware vendors screw it up because they lower the built-in elements of the operating system. So somehow if you install the one or the other product and it's not configured and updated properly, you lower your base level security. So, and this is what we all observe. If you buy a new computer as a consumer, you know that there are third party virus engines without a license, and we know how dangerous that is. Mm-hmm. But somehow, even if in business, people think if I buy the most expensive solution, yeah, that's it, I'm safe. No, no, you're not. You already bought, by the way, you already bought the most expensive solution because you have to run Windows 10 Enterprise Edition mm-hmm. just to get all the interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. So if we focus on that, I guess you may apply to me that Enterprise Edition is mandatory, because what are the basic elements that you don't want to skip? Which do we need? And just in case we don't have the possibility to use Enterprise Agreement, what can we do?
Well, when you have if you would ask me, Enterprise is it's nice to have. I would not say it's mandatory. What I need for security in a company environment nowadays or an enterprise environment is I need hard disk encryption. That's provided in Pro as well. So BitLocker is included in Pro nowadays. Windows 7 it wasn't, but since that it has been. I need whitelisting. Now, AppLocker is included in the enterprise version only. It has a really nice user interface. And the engine is better, but you still do have software restriction policies. Version 1, AppLocker is just software restriction policies. Version 2 internally just has a fancy new name. So so you can get software restriction policies in Pro version as well. And I've installed even military-grade environments with software restriction policies since 2002, and they're still running them. So it's not a problem. You can do it with the old one. There's actually a problem with AppLocker nowadays that people are missing certain attributes that the old SRP version 1 had. So they're actually using both anyway. But
What are these things that people use?
AppLocker looks at binary. But the software restriction policy was able to target things like CPL files and OCX files. Mm-hmm. So they had different kinds of file extensions that were supported than what AppLocker has. AppLocker only supports executables and binaries and scripts and MSIs packaged apps nowadays, the modern universal apps. But anyway, so whitelisting as a concept is what you need. I don't really care how you do it, but you need that concept of whitelisting. So rather than trying to fight against 300,000 new bad things a day, you just list those. I'm running an environment with 35,000 computers that has an AppLocker list of 14 lines. So that gets updated with one line maybe a year mm-hmm. compared to adding 300,000 lines every day. So whitelisting is easy as hell. Like everyone says, it's super difficult and we always struggle with AppLocker. That's totally, like, I'm totally the opposite. I love it. It's so easy. But I always kind of brainwash myself a bit because I always have that in my head saying that I could also be faced with adding blacklisting of 300,000 lines per day. So anything feels easy compared to that. So
yeah, it's not a good idea. To do the whitelist, the blacklisting, yeah. If you can organize the whitelisting with just one wizard,
yeah.
So that's a nice thing. That was what I found out. It's pretty hard to get the proper configuration with software restriction policies. Mm. It's super easy to get it with AppLocker. Mm. It's getting a little bit more complicated in Windows 10, just because of you can screw it up from the user perspective if you don't. Use more than one wizard just to organize the new UWP packages yeah. because you need that, because then you screw up the start menu and
exactly.
stuff like that, you know that. So, but it's very easy to configure. But what I know is it's not perfect if you just run the wizard, because they do ignore the one or the other folder that you might add another rule for it. Mm. So somehow you can, what I know from you is if you try to install, for example, Mozilla Firefox, it perfectly installs as a standard user.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just because if you don't give them administrator rights, then it's looking for a folder where the user is allowed to write to.
Mm.
So but you as an administrator, you want to avoid it.
Mm.
So is there some thing that you would add to the standard wizard, to the app locker rules? That well, is really the, mandatory?
Well, the AppLocker rules have a lot of things missing. So first of all, AppLocker rules, if you use the standard rules that it provides, first of all, there are known leaks. So what you do is, for example, you allow, to get back even one more step, AppLocker serves no purpose if you're running admin. AppLocker has no, administrators can run by definition any code they want in Windows. AppLocker can't fight against it. So the first thing is that you have to remove your admin rights. Then you install AppLocker, well, then you deploy AppLocker. Now AppLocker adds a whitelisting rule by default, for example, for Windows folder. But even Microsoft has mistakes in that because in Windows folder there are subfolders that allow limited users to add contents to it. So it leaks by default. So you have to have exceptions to the rule that says allow everything from Windows. Exceptions in AppLocker are a bit weird because exceptions don't deny anything. Exceptions just let those rules, let those folders or files flow through the rule. So it's not the... many people see it as they say that I allow everything from Windows and then I have an exception of PowerShell. Now, that doesn't deny PowerShell. It just says that that rule doesn't apply to PowerShell. So then it might be caused by another rule, which, for example, allows all signed programs from Microsoft, and then PowerShell runs just fine. So exception, you have to always in AppLocker remember that the exceptions don't deny anything. They just accept it from that rule. And then... I deny PowerShell for limited users always on every platform I have because my PowerShell is used by admins and PowerShell is used by every single malware I know. So I deny PowerShell. All, for example, every single CryptoLocker, WannaCry, or whatever you want to have, whatever you talk about, every one of those is blocked by that simple rule of disallowing PowerShell from limited users. It's used by my management engines. It's used by my administrators heavily all the time. Some environments use PowerShell for limited users in logon scripts. So that is then another exception you have to have because you have to allow them from a certain location or allow them by a certain signer. So you have to have these things. It's getting more complicated now because all of the malware guys are now starting to target DLLs, which means that now, like 2 years ago, 90% of my customers did not look at DLLs when it comes to binaries because it was considered a impact on performance if you start doing it. But now we've had to enable it in the environments, DLL inspection as well. So, for example, if I install, like yesterday morning, I rebooted my computer, logged on, and the first thing that happens is that I get an application error saying that something couldn't start. It's not the AppLocker saying anything, but it's something just saying I can't start. And that was Slack. I use Slack for communicating with all my customers and friends and whatever. So Slack didn't start. Now, that's a very common one because it's installed as a limited user, which means that... limited user installs it in his own profile. So it won't run against AppLocker because AppLocker doesn't allow anything from the C users folder by default so that I can block those Firefoxes, etc. that you mentioned. So now Slack doesn't start. Now the problem is that if I do a whitelist entry for Slack and say that anything that's signed by Slack is now allowed, it won't work because Slack doesn't sign their DLLs. So I already, like half a year ago, spoke to the engineers at Slack, and they're fixing this at some point because it is an issue. I have no issues with anyone else but Slack, so I mentioned that to them, and they said that they will fix it. But currently, whenever I have a new version of Slack, which happens automatically because it automatically updates itself without admin approval, so it's the worst possible program for AppLocker because it's run by a standard user, doesn't require admin, and automatically updates. So what I had to do yesterday morning was to use my own code signing certificate to sign those DLLs from Slack. That's just easier for me than doing anything else. Now those DLLs are approved. Why? Well, because they're signed by Adminize, not by Slack.
Yeah, and now we cross the border for For the average guy.
Exactly. Yeah?
This is now we're getting into a sophisticated business.
But AppLock, I'd say white listing. Like if you do AppLocker, it's very good if you just turn it on. Even if you just turn it on, it's gonna be a tremendous increase in your security if you just turn it on. Don't try to be the wizard that knows the enterprise stuff about it. I used to run my personal PC, not attached to any enterprise, just my own PC. I used to run it with AppLocker so that I had the default rules, and then I had one additional rule, and that rule said allow anything that is signed, because 95% of malware is not signed. So I just kill 270,000 pieces of malware every day by that single rule. So that would be closer to an average guy. But if you would ask me what an average normal guy would know, they would not find software restriction policy or AppLocker. Mm-hmm. They would not know how to use it. So if you get back to that average guy, then a lot more important than this is just have Defender running, have your firewall turned on everywhere you are, like never ever switch a firewall off anymore. Have UAC set like it is. If you want to have a very super easy way of increasing your security, raise that user account control lever that they have, just up it one level.
Windows Vista level.
Vista mode, yeah. And then the most important thing of anything is just start using your PC daily as a limited user.
Yeah, my students, my customers, always tend to say that. Well, I read that there is a chance that I get infected by this or that. And I think we should really talk about statistics. You can't be safe. Because if you have a really bad guy who's focusing on you, he or she will find a way.
Of course.
So definitely. But it's all about statistics. And if you can remove 1,000 problems and you just have to face one more and you might never see that, you're on the good side already. So I think if you want a perfect security, you have to plug your computer off. So that's the only way you really can enjoy your peace of mind at 100% level.
And it's very common, what I try to tell all my students and all my customers all the time, one thing that is very weird is the fact that people see security as, if I can't do it perfectly, I won't do it at all.
Yeah.
It's a very common mentality. Someone will be, I'll tell them, like, BitLocker is a very important thing for you, and there will always be someone who says, there has been found a theoretical weakness in BitLocker. I'm just like, but does that mean you're not going to deploy it? Like, why not? It's like, do you want to increase your security by 99.9% or leave it at zero? But it's a very common mentality. People don't want to do security because it's not bulletproof.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to offend anyone, but lots of people that I meet, they remove the user account control, they disable IPv6, they let their users run as administrators, and of course they do. They log on as the full administrator of the domain, stuff like that. And then they argue, yeah, it worked for 10 years now, we're fine. And I tell people that, first of all, you do not know if you're fine. Because if you really got the bad things, you do not know. And the second thing is that this is like arguing, I'm always driving drunk and I never use the belt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, from a statistic point of view, you're wrong. It may work for you alone, but this is not what we're talking about. Yeah. I have to come back to one element that we started from, the Enterprise Edition. I said, I think it's mandatory somehow, and I want to add one more argument because the first one didn't work. The second argument is the LTSB version. Is that something that your customers should need? Because we know there was an issue lately with the updating stuff. You became quite popular, and even more popular than you already are, because you found out that there are issues with a constant update mechanism. Can you tell about that?
Yeah, so until this... these latest builds of Windows 10 now we're at summer 2017, but just like a few months ago, we still had the problem that whenever you installed Windows and Windows 10 started to upgrade itself, The problem was that they had a built-in debugging mechanism that's been in place since Windows XP, which meant that when you're in setup of Windows, you could always press Shift F10 to get a command prompt. Now, what Microsoft forgot was that when they do in-place upgrading with Windows 10, that debugging option was still there. So you could just, whenever it started upgrading, you pressed Shift F10, it gave you system-level access, so you were the root of the system, and also it switched off BitLocker. So any computer that you found that was upgrading, you would just press two buttons and you had full access, full permissions and full access to all data that was on the machine. So that was just ridiculous. Now, they had the way of fixing it since Windows Vista. Windows Vista supported a tag file that could be put inside of your image and it would block that Shift F10. So now, the easy part for them was just to fix this issue. So put in the tag file, use their own systems to fix it. And now the newest versions, since after 17.03, it will start to automatically be blocked. Now that doesn't block the bigger issue. And the bigger issue is that Microsoft currently has no way of not disabling BitLocker when we're upgrading. So even after the fix they said they put in place, the problem still exists, the bigger problem. And it's just every time you upgrade Windows 10, during that upgrade for a certain amount of time, which sadly is tens of minutes anyway, that computer will be not protected by BitLocker. So our only way to solve this sadly currently is to not allow unattended upgrades. And even Microsoft has to agree on that. That is the only way. And their blog now states, like, do not leave your computer unattended. And even in some parts of the setups, it says, like, it's not a good idea to leave your computer now. But we all know in reality, sadly, that that is the exact time when people leave their computers because they don't want to be there for the next 45 minutes.
But it requires physical access to the computer.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
If for some environments, this might not be an issue.
No. And if you're running it inside of your company, then many people see it as it's not an issue. The Austrian government, for example, contacted me and they were very worried about this because they're the ones that see it as I do, which is people forget internal threats. For an internal threat, the problem is that whenever your computer doesn't have BitLocker, that means you can get admin access to your own box. So an internal thread will just wait for the next upgrade and then they know, yes, now I'm a local admin, which sadly, of course, means they can run whatever tools they want and start attacking their environment. So for internal threats, this is a really big issue. Because those computers are protected by the walls and you're inside the company, so people see that it's not a problem because we can just upgrade them and no one travels with the laptops that would be stolen. But that's an external threat. The internal threat is there. But then the LTSB, I'm a bad MVP because I'm a Microsoft operating system MVP, so I should be like totally playing with their current rules, which means that I'm probably the only MVP who would say that I'm installing LTSB everywhere I have it, except on my own personal laptop, which I more use for learning. But in my environments, I'm running LTSB. I told everyone now almost 2 years ago, I told them that I might upgrade to current branch for business in summer 2018. Because I believe that in 3 years, Microsoft gets their own stuff together and realize how this works. Like now I had a customer who I told half of the environment is LTSB, half of it is current branch for business. So that was kind of dramatic. They had 2,000 computers as LTSB, 2,000 computers as CBB. Those LTSBs work just fine, and business runs as usual. CBB, now they had the latest upgrade. It broke Edge. None of them can start Edge. The browser doesn't start. And they already said it's the only browser that they're going to support. So if they have issues of this magnitude, everyone's asking me, like, how can you be saying that you're not going for current branch or current branch business, because you should be saying that. I was like, no, I'm just saying that I can still upgrade because I'm in LTSB. I can, whenever I want, I can do an in-place upgrade to CBB. But the ones who are in CBB can never go back to LTSB. So in a few years, I'm happy to say, maybe I was wrong, maybe I wasn't, but I haven't had a single issue. And I will take the laughter when everyone in the world is CBB. I'm just makes my life easier because
I guess this is an issue because people tend to think that we need to find the old ways and the new products. Mm. And LTSB somehow seems to give them their peace of mind to stay behind because companies want to stay behind. So the two things that I hear is, okay, we stay on Windows 7. Mm. And I tell people, okay, but first of all, the security level at all is much lower than on Windows 10.
Absolutely.
And then the next big thing is that, yeah, you might stay there for 2 years. And then what you're doing then? So running Windows 10, especially the LTSB version, will give them that's what they are looking for. Mm. But Microsoft heavily addresses that this is only meant for ATM and stuff like that. So I personally would be afraid of a situation where Microsoft starts nagging me, starts removing elements that I need in my business to avoid that I use LTSB. That might be an issue, right?
Yeah, and also the thing is that this is my own personal experience. So the problem, I also said that I will do this until summer 2018. Why I had that in mind was two things. One, Microsoft originally said that they want to have an LTSB version available every 3 years. Now they've had it available every year. Every year we've had a new version of LTSB as well. So they couldn't do what they stated in the beginning because they haven't had Windows 10 running as good as they wanted. So they've had to give the LTSB boosts every year as well. Now, if you think about upgrading your operating systems in an enterprise once a year, that even if we would be a fast company in Finland, we could maximum do it maybe every 3 or every 5 years. The project itself takes so long. Now, problem, of course, is Microsoft, they don't want me to be afraid about this because they want the future to be so that Windows will just constantly upgrade. Now, if they say that, then that needs to work.
That's it.
And so I need a few years to see that they get this mechanism working. When the mechanism works, then I'm just fine with the new way of doing it. I will move gladly to CBB or CB or whatever, but I will gladly move. But I need some time from them to make the mechanism itself work. I've seen it not working. I have good examples where it works, but I have so much bad examples that I need to get rid of those first. Also, I needed to put a little bit of deadline to this, saying it's summer 2018, because we will start having new CPU versions, for example, that are not supported by LTSB.
That's it, for example. Yeah. The one thing of nagging me as a customer, pushing forward. To round this up and just focus for another minute on the LTSB version. People now start using Internet Explorer because it's in the LTSB version, and they're totally fine with it because they think this is a super super great browser because we can do that all by the means of group policy. And then I personally would argue, okay, so the first thing that you should do after using LTSB, install Google Chrome. Mm. Or, for example, if you totally dislike Google, then, for example, Opera might be a good idea because it's the same engine. Mm. You got that built-in Flash player. And in terms of Chrome browser, you have the add-ons for the group policy. Mm. Would you apply to that idea, that this is a good idea to raise the level of security?
I think so. So Internet Explorer is not that big of an issue anymore in a way. The problem is it's not Microsoft doesn't want to develop it that much, so that's an even bigger issue. But security-wise, the problem has always been that the malware building side will choose what to target, and they will target the one that has the biggest market share. I met a guy in Germany in a conference, and he was building exploit kits. His profession was building exploit kits, and he went through statistics on different operating system market shares. And I sat there for the 60 minutes, and there were two interesting things. One was he started going through desktop operating systems, and when he got to Windows 10, he said, this is Windows 10 with 27%, but we're not interested in that because it automatically upgrades, so it's not an interest for me. And went on, and I was like, oh my God, like that's the bad guy saying that what I'm trying to tell my customers, that there actually is a reason why Microsoft forces you to update automatically and not allow you to deny updates, that there actually is a reason. Now, this bad guy is there saying that I'm not interested in Windows 10 because it automatically upgrades. So that's a good thing for me. And the next thing was like the guy anyway said, forget anything I just said. We're going to concentrate on Android only. Because that's the only thing he's interested in. There's now 8,800 new malware samples per day for Android. That has increased way faster than anything in the history of malware. So Android is, as I always say, it's like they ask, everyone picks at me because now I have an iPhone and I'm a Windows guy. Now it's okay nowadays. Some years ago, it would have not been okay. But that's what I always say. I'm not saying Android is bad, but I'm saying I don't want to have the one that has the most malware to it. I'm rather keep me and my family.
The ways Android operating systems, the plural, are distributed by all the vendors. That's the real issue.
Oh, that is.
And what I personally dislike, I never was a fan of Windows. I never was a fan of Linux. I never was a fan of macOS. I always was a fan of the internet, of compute and networking. And I always liked operating systems. So I always had a Linux box. When I was old enough to check that out, I always wanted to have a Macintosh computer. Back in those days, I couldn't afford it. And, of course, I grew up, the same is true for me, with Windows. So I dislike this religious approach that something is good or bad just because it's the one or the other. And nowadays, it's stupid to say Linux is good or bad, Windows is good or bad. You may dislike the company, that's totally okay, but from a statistics point of view, there is a certain variety in facing all the problems. And I'm personally fine with Android. I try to convince myself multiple times to change, but honestly, I can't cope it because I personally think I dislike that I cannot buy just a phone. I have to order the one from Google because I believe I only want the vanilla, the native Android thing. And so there are only few phones. The Google Pixel and the other devices are fine. I used to have a Fairphone. I really like that. And I really like the idea. But to be honest, sometimes you can buy that in Germany. If they have a new one, you have to fly to the United States or wait, stuff like that. And nowadays, if you buy an iPhone, no customer will ever complain if you hand out an iPhone. Even you personally totally dislike that Apple makes such a huge amount of money. So it's amazing. 15 years ago, anyone would in our age would say Apple is a super nice company, right?
Yeah.
It totally changed today. Yeah, but let's come back to Windows. So we found out that LTSB might be a good idea to get rid of the mandatory updates. You are allowed to update, but you only receive security updates for 10 years. But keep in mind, Microsoft maybe do decide later on that they do the one or the other thing that you don't like.
If you wanna use LTSB will it's a good choice. But what I wanna emphasize is you don't wanna plan for just 2 years. So which means that LTSB with a plan of how to in place upgrade from there to current brands for business in the near future is the way I would go for. And if it's just, and of course, depends totally on the company. So I have a factory that builds clothes, a clothing factory. It needs to run 24/7 all the time. It's LTSB for sure for the next few years. There's no question about it. Microsoft talks about ATMs, single purpose machines. I'd say machines that need to be running for longer times for sure than the maximum time you can stay with a single version currently. So like if you think about, you have to upgrade in the next 18 months if you're going to be current branch for business or current branch or things like this. So if you need to make sure that for the next 2 years we have a situation that everything needs to run, it still calls for LTSB. Is things going to change in 2 years? If we sit on this sofa in 2 years and talk about this, it might be that I'm saying, I'm happy that I chose LTSB. I'm not anymore running it.
I take this as a promise for Summit 2019.
Yeah, exactly.
We talk about that again. So let's focus on another aspect. So we talked about Windows 10 on a general from some general aspects that it's a secure operating system because there are lots of improvements. Mm-hmm. Microsoft learned a lot. You should use AppLocker or at least software restrictions policies. Mm-hmm. Of course, you need BitLocker mm-hmm. for the hard drive encryption. And more or less, stick to the defaults. Mm-hmm. So if you do not know what you're doing, mm-hmm. or you're not very sure, stick to the defaults. So, but there is one thing that we both would like to change, because on a regular setup, you create an admin user, and this is not the way we should do it, right?
No. So back in 1993, the first user guide of NT operating systems stated that there is basically no security in Windows unless you get rid of admin rights. So it was never built. For example, the weird thing about this is there's only one thing in Windows currently that can fight against admin rights, and that's device guard. Device guard is actually a system that works below the kernel at the hypervisor level, which means it can fight against admins. Although that sadly blocks the possibility of having user exceptions. So you can, if you have a Windows 10 Enterprise with device guard, you have a device that can be used for a single purpose, but if it breaks, it can't be fixed by the management because you can't run anything that you stated in that rule. So that's the only thing in Windows's history that can fight against admins, because AppLocker runs for user mode processes. AppLocker doesn't play with drivers, and any admin can install a driver. It's a very simple thing. There's absolutely no way of building security by trying to block, by getting someone to be an admin and try to block bad things from happening. That doesn't work. Group policy doesn't affect admins if they don't want to. So they can bypass any policies. They can disable BitLocker. They can disable AppLocker. They can install drivers. They can read their own passwords and everyone else's passwords. They can take anyone's identity on a computer. So it is impossible. So the first thing is to get rid of admin rights, use a limited user. If you buy a Windows 10 box, make sure it has BitLocker. Everyone needs to have BitLocker enabled nowadays. Everyone. And then the next thing you do is you create yourself a new user that is just a limited user. Because sadly, Windows still, by default, makes everyone admins, except for family accounts, which I learned some time ago because of my kids. If you install a new family account, that'll be a limited account by default. That's a historical change in Windows. But just make yourself another user and have a separate admin user.
But it's so super annoying, people would tell you, to just get all the Mac screens. And I really don't see how this Mac screen helps me. Is that useful? Or what did Microsoft screw up that people don't get the idea of user account control?
Well, user account control, first of all, it's people see it as nagging, which means most of the people who tell me they disable UAC is because they say that UAC will ask you for yes or no, and that person will always click yes anyway. So UAC is useless. And they disable it. Well, for administrators, it's asked yes or no, but that's only about 25% of cases where it asks something. So 75% of cases, it just denies you from doing bad things. So UAC is not like, anytime I need admin rights, I will pop up a question, yes or no. 75% of situations, it just blocks, which makes you super secure compared to not having UAC, because 75% is anyway blocked, not even asking yes or no. So that's one thing. The other thing is that when you're a limited user, UAC is just a great add-on for you, because it's automatic run as. In Windows XP, when you were a limited user and you had a separate admin account, you would have to go and shift right-click something to get a run as option. And then you change.
If at all.
If at all, yes. And then in Windows 10, you're a limited user. You try to do stuff. You don't have enough permissions to do it. It will automatically ask you for an elevated account. So I've always seen UAC for a limited user. I've just seen it as automatic run as. It made my life so much easier than it was ever before.
We should add that user account control more or less only works locally. So yeah. What people don't get is that the second that you start using the remote desktop protocol, somehow you're lost because you get all the next screens also on servers. But if you're running a management console or something else and you do the networking stuff, that user account control does not apply to that. So the perfect situation would be that you simply install the remote server administration tools and do everything remotely. You use PowerShell, do things remotely. So then you can, in a very easy way, you can set up an environment where you're simply run Server Manager once, PowerShell once, and everything is fine. But people don't do that, right?
It's a funny thing that I've always tried to tell people is they should remember that remote desktop protocol on servers was put in place as an emergency console. The remote desktop protocol has only two licenses per server. That's ridiculous. You think about a bank that has 200,000 seats. They have 500 admins. It's not possible to have a server that can only be logged on by two users. Even small companies know this. You have to call your colleague. Can you log off the server? I can't get in because it says maximum amount of users.
Yeah, I'm always kidding because I say, how many people are you at the Active Directory team? And then the number is 20. So let me guess how many domain controllers we have? 10. That's it, you know? The John and Paul are using domain controller 1 and so on. That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's if you compare the thing, remote desktop protocol, RDP connections, two connections per server. So it can't be that can never have been the way it was designed, and it never was, because the way Windows is supposed to be managed is that you have a privileged access workstation, or in many companies just any workstation, but anyway, that is used, and then you install ERSAT, remote server administration tools, that allows 16.7 million connections per server. That's the way it's supposed to be. As same goes for nowadays PowerShell. ERSAT has been there since Windows 2000. PowerShell has been there since 2006. So both of those are the ways Windows is supposed to be managed. Servers are supposed to be dumb boxes with no keyboards and mice. You never log on to those unless you're in trouble. I will never manage my server by logging on to that server. My server has been on a small Intel NUC box back home for ages. I never log on to it because everything I manage from a management workstation, which in my company's case, the only difference is between my workstation and my wife's workstation, which means the other one doesn't have this capability and the other one has. Now everyone can guess which one, but anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. I sometimes I think we speak like the Pope does. Yeah, about the pure religion. And if you go out in the field, the situation is completely different. If you remove remote desktop protocol, in terms of using server core, people are driving nuts.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To be honest, there is an issue. It's not easy because Microsoft's talking about server core and nowadays of nano server. So by nature, the problem is gone because you will not be able to run something locally. Which makes any sense from a graphical user interface. But there are so many consoles, tools in Windows who do not work properly remotely. So this is number one on my wish list, that they remove all the nagging stuff, isn't it? Mm. When will they finish this work? Do you expect it to be 1 year ahead or 2 year ahead, that everything will work perfectly remotely?
I'd say rather 5 years from now or 10 years from now we'll be a lot better with this. I wouldn't think I'm not expecting it to be fixed in the near 2 years. But on the other hand, as well, there are, as you said, there are many things that don't work that well. But I have a lot of companies that don't really need to use RDP. Actually, I have a lot of companies that disallow RDP, especially banks. They disallow RDP because of the known problems. They actually allow remote assistance to be used if needed, but they don't allow remote desktop because there you can do logons and those can be attacked against quite easily. So
yeah, definitely.
But
yeah.
But it's a big issue. But mostly I see this as a tip for everyone. Of course, you should remember that this is the same issue as when people call me and say that they have the new group policy templates for Windows 10, but they can't seem to set the settings. They have all the new ADMX files and stuff like that, but they still can't set these settings. I always ask them, where are you running your group policy management console on? And they reply, on the server 2012 R2. Well, it won't work. It was never designed to work. Because you can't set Windows 10 settings from a server 2012 R2. You have to have remote server administration tools installed on Windows 10 to be able, because Group Policy Management Console doesn't read the ADMX files only. It uses a lot of settings from the base operating system that it's running on. It queries that OS, and it's querying the wrong OS if you're running it on a server. So Group Policy is actually something you can't do on a server properly. Although, still, as you said, if you go to the field, I'd say 90% of customers do it that way. Only when they get in trouble, they call me and ask me, and I say, but you're doing it the wrong way. It's never supposed to be run on the server.
You really have to evangelize that, and there are a bunch of examples, firewall policies that do not exist until the software is in place, or if you're from a client perspective, to set up the proper app locker rights, you need to have the UWP apps
exactly,
installed.
Exactly, and they're not on the server.
Yeah, and they're not on the server. Is that combines two topics, LTSB and group policy. For the administrator in a mixed environment, is it fair to say that you should use a current branch for business machine because you need the UWP apps to create group policies and stuff like that for those people in the environment that have a full-blown Windows 10?
Yeah, you should. Yeah. You should have it. And LTSB, you have to remember as well, one very big misconcept about LTSB is many people say that LTSB won't run universal apps. But then I always have to show them like Windows 10 LTSB, and I'll just, without saying anything, I'll just click on the start button. And you see the start menu, and then my students will be asking me like, what are you doing? It's like, just showing you you're wrong. Like, what do you mean? Start menu is a universal app. The engine is there. You can run any universal app you want except Edge on that box, but you have to sideload it in. The engine is there. You wouldn't have a start menu on LTSB if it wasn't there. So people get this wrong. They believe that LTSB doesn't run universal apps. It does run them perfectly. It's just the default apps are missing and the store won't work as a delivery mechanism. You can sideload them with SCCM. You can sideload them with PowerShell. So even in an LTSB environment, there might sometimes be the issue that you have to have a computer that has those... has the ability to use these universal apps so that you can distribute them to others.
Yeah, of course.
Of course, that's not very common now, but Google, for example, is very heavily looking into doing a universal app version again of Chrome. They had it for Windows 8 for a matter of 6 months and then they discontinued it. But they're still looking into it again now when it's a bit more grown up, the whole universal platform.
Yeah, it might be interesting to see if that the nowadays, the newly invented possibility to wrap classic Win32 apps into something like a universal Windows app. It's not a real universal app because it's not utilizing the underlying API, but it feels like it, and you can distribute it. iTunes will be the example that Microsoft announced at the latest build.
And Spotify will be as well.
Yeah, so might be there is some way to combine these things. But we have to face one very important argument that you will hear in this context. We at the bank have this one, two, three special app which requires us to run as administrators, and we can't get rid of it because it's the app that needs it, so we have to provide the user rights. Is there any possibility to somehow fiddle away around this that I can run my apps needing administrative rights?
If it's that important for the bank, like this is so funny because I get this conversation all the time. My company specializes in this, so I get the same comment, which is like, we have this so important app. Nothing in the bank will work. It is the most critical app. It's $30 per machine, and the issue is solved. So if it's this critical, as you just stated, that it is this critical for everything, like, why don't you just change the whole thing? So with third-party apps, you can change the mechanism that admin rights are delivered, which means that by default, Windows only allows administrative rights to be given to a certain user or to a certain computer. You can have a user that has admin rights on multiple computers, or on a single computer, you can state that this guy will now have local admin rights. So you're always a full admin or you're not. You don't have anything in between by default. You used to have power users in between, but nowadays they don't have any permissions. So she still exists as a group, but doesn't do anything. But anyway, you only have options of limited and admin. Now, the third-party apps allow you to change this so that you give admin rights to processes or tasks instead of users or computers, which means the banking app that would be now three most critical apps will run as admin. Again, the weird thing is there's the security guy who attacks instantly. But that gives the ability of somehow benefiting from that app and using those admin rights. Honestly, still, you're 97% more secure doing it this way than the other one which you suggested, which was to give them full admin.
And it's statistics, right?
Yeah.
And I guess you also have the chance to look at something like AppV to somehow virtualize that if it works.
Yeah. And also, there will be you will find the ways around it. I've never had a customer. I have a bank that installed third-party apps for 200,000 workstations to get this run. That becomes quite expensive. That's millions of euros or dollars put into this project. Mm-hmm. But many of these cases are actually talking about like 40 to 100 workstations. You pay, let's say, 3,000 euros to solve every issue related to this ever, and compare that to how much you pay for a lot less important stuff. I'd still argue it's cheap and easy way of getting away from it. You can also do it for tasks. So one that I face every single time wherever I am is the problem that the engineers who need to plug their laptops into physical devices need to set static IPs. And by default in Windows, a limited user cannot set a static IP because they can't change the TCP/IP settings. So that one with third-party apps, we can just allow changing IPs instead of giving admin rights. There's this network configuration operators group in Windows mm-hmm. that can do it, but then the engineers won't accept it because it nags. It requires dual authentication because of UAC. You have the right, but you have to go through UAC. So it makes their lives harder, and they rather pay the 30 euros to fix it without nagging,
as they call it. Yeah, good idea. Approaching the end of this talk, I'd like to finally focus on the military grade somehow. I'm not quite sure if you heard about this. I guess the name is the Project Barcelona. Mm. This is invented in the latest creators update that they wrapped the Edge browser into a kind of container.
Yep.
So this is a hidden feature. Only a few people know about that yet. And it proves that Microsoft's heavily investing in getting the latest stuff into it and even making it even more secure. Is this something that will apply to lots of applications in future times that we see stuff like, I don't want to name it Docker, because this is related to the server stuff that the Linux guys does. Mm-hmm. But this container technology might be another approach to get to the next level is this the future, or is this just one example where it improves Windows?
It is the future. So everything started with the ability of Windows 10 Enterprise to allow what's known as virtual secure mode. So that is the one that is used by Device Guard and Credential Guard. And it's a secure kernel inside of Windows 10 to store secrets in. So Windows 10 has two kernels, a normal kernel and a secure kernel, with different kinds of abilities to them. Now, Project Barcelona, or Windows Defender Application Guard, is the official name. So Windows 10 Windows Defender Application Guard kind of adds a third one next to it. It's not a full-blown kernel like secure kernel and kernel in a way are. It's more of a container. Container in a way that you have a separate user mode from the kernel mode. But that's just for Edge now. There are limitations to this. The biggest one that people are quite sad about is, of course, that it's only available for Enterprise. So the sandboxing of browsers is not available for Pro. That's what I almost mentioned it when you started asking this Enterprise thing, because that is one thing that would be, in my company, a real reason to have Enterprise instead of Pro, is that I can't have the world's most secure browser if I don't have Enterprise. Because honestly, it is more secure than the third-party versions currently. It is heavily using a third. They learned a lot from a third-party product. I think it's Promium. Yeah, but there's a few of those. But anyway, they learned a lot and shared knowledge with them to create this. But it's a sandbox environment. If you have a third-party application, it's running on Windows and has a sandbox on top of that. As this one has something next to Windows having a sandbox in it, it'll always be more secure than those third-party ones. So it's a great thing. It's going to be, I don't take my word for it, but I would be willing to bet that the next one will be Office. Because Office macros and things like these need to be isolated exactly like that one. Outlook or email, whatever. So the bad things will, if you asked if it's just for this or the future, it is the future. There's going to be a lot of those containers running this less secure stuff in them. Don't know what officially, it's just Edge now. But as the technology is there, I'm quite sure Office will be on the roadmap very soon.
I'm pretty curious how does this impact the performance of the machine. So what I learned from my little containers experience now is that containers in Linux are very lightweight. I wouldn't sign that for Windows nowadays, especially not for the Hyper-V containers. So, and if you do the stuff that we already mentioned in Project Barcelona, it can be it can consume a lot of compute power and memory and stuff like that. And we will have to find out if that works properly. True. Because, yeah, there might be issues. But
so 1703 only has the group policy templates and things to manage Barcelona. But the project itself is not available there, so only the insider builds after 1703 have the actual functionality in them.
Yeah.
So many people are asking me this all the time, because now they have 1703 on their machine and they start looking at group policy and they see all the settings there.
Yeah.
So it's a bit misleading. The technique itself, you have to be in the insider program to be able to test it out. Of course, they have a lot of issues still to just make it usable, because they need to make printing and saving favorites. And many people, for example, favorites was the, well, that was one thing that they had a problem with, but now they're changing, for example, in 1703, and the newest insider builds favorites sync between Edge and Internet Explorer, and they anyway have to a little bit re-architecture this, because the problem with safe browsing with Project Barcelona was that when you were safely browsing and you put in a favorite, and you shut down that browser, it shut down the container and destroyed everything you just did. So all your favorites, anything you had saved, was gone as well. Also, like, printing is a lot more difficult than people believe.
Yes.
So printing from a container to the secure normal Windows. Yeah. It's not a piece of cake. So they have a lot of things to work out. But it's very interesting. Now, but it's very interesting also that it's only for enterprise because
again, yeah.
Enterprise users are quite often still secured in many, many ways. It's the millions and hundreds of millions of end users that are not, and they won't have the ability to use this. So, we need to give it some time.
But on the other hand, the mere mortals, the consumers, if you don't change anything, you get the auto updates. Mm. So, and you, what we saw now by WannaCry is that you're safe with that, and the enterprises screw it up. Because they the default. No, we're not into the defaults because it's not sophisticated.
Yeah, yeah.
So, wrapping it all up, did we miss something, some core technology that we should focus or mention even just for a minute? Or is that the whole package? You mentioned Device Guard.
Device Guard is something I would like to mention about it. This is sounds like a joke, but it's far from it. So, what I tell my customers all the time is that I'm quite often with Microsoft people, and there's always a Microsoft sales guy who will tell me that Device Guard is the greatest protection for Windows ever, and it's like AppLocker on steroids. And I always tell my customers that this guy here, he's absolutely correct. You just have to remember that for most people, it's not good to use steroids. It's just honestly, you should stay away from steroids. So it's like the ATMs. Really, really single-purpose machines, those you might put Device Guard on. Device Guard is not... Microsoft uses Device Guard on privileged access workstations that can take down Azure data centers. That is critical, military-grade enough to warrant for Device Guard. Now, when Device Guard gets these new abilities like SCCM approval for apps automatically, it's the least secure method of using Device Guard. But anyway, it might be closer. In a few years, we might see this AppLocker Device Guard being merged in a way, and then I will gladly have the user interface of AppLocker with the crazy good protection of Device Guard. But currently, honestly, just like use AppLocker, stay away from Device Guard unless you are the guy who runs the nuclear plant or takes care of missiles at an Air Force base. So just that's not a reason for having enterprise to get Device Guard. Credential Guard, on the other hand, is something everyone should deploy if they can. That just blocks past the hash attacks. But if we're looking at consumer, end user grade, then they don't even get Device Guard, so it's not for them anyway. But just as a tip for even enterprises, just remember Device Guard is very, very high secure environments currently. It's not meant for, it's very hard to manage.
Yeah, I guess we're living in interesting times, and that's the good thing doing our job. It never gets boring. Mm. There's always that new kid in town. Mm. And although you might like or dislike, for example, Windows 10 or Linux or what's or Apple devices, change is the only continuity. So that's what I really like in doing our job. So there might be alternate approaches in terms of using what we used to name terminal services. Mm. But then again, you will find out that Windows Server 2016 is quite special because this is the brother to the LTSB version. So don't ask me how to run the Facebook app from that. So I guess this is an untold story. So, and you might want to change to another operating system. It's quite hard because Apple somehow seemed to lose their interest in Mac and Macintosh operating systems. Now they announced just a bunch of new things, but it's I don't want to bet on it because they're so heavily focusing on iOS. Mm. And if I may quote Bruce Pietti, one of the inventors of the PowerShell, he told me in public, so this is not a secret, many people at Microsoft expect that something like Chrome OS, so we're talking about Android, that will be the operating system of the future, very stripped down because you're doing all the things on the web, even in a browser, or in terms of enterprise technology, something like terminal services, Citrix, stuff like that. That might be an alternate approach, mm-hmm. but we will see what the future brings. It's challenging right now. The the fluent updates are really a problem. So if you want to learn more, you created a bunch of videos. You're talking so often on summits, on stuff like Ignite. Where can we find you?
The next big conferences, I'm going to do our Tech Mentor conferences in US. That'll be in Redmond in August. And then it's actually Ignite Orlando. I'm not sure what I'm going to talk about it, but I know and I can announce that I am speaking there, but I don't know of what yet, but I will be there. So that's September. My website, win-foo.com. My blog is blog.win-foo.com. I have a dojo of videos. I'm building 10 new Pluralsight courses this year. So I have a proactive security course on Pluralsight, for example, on this topic. And
It's not too challenging to get to the next level.
No.
Just subscribe to Pluralsight or stuff like that and go through
Yeah, and you can get all my courses online for $20 a month at my own website. So that's not hard either. I would still recommend that anyone who wants to be a security expert, they should learn Windows internals. That's the most important thing. Security will be features and tools as long as you don't know how Windows works. They will only transform the concepts when you understand how the operating system works.
Yeah.
So,
and I would like to add, learn PowerShell if you didn't, because it didn't have it done yet.
Absolutely. So I get this question all the time. What should I learn in the future? That's a great way to end this up. So there's three things you have to learn and one thing you have to accept. You have to learn PowerShell. You have to learn PKI. You have to learn IPv6. And you have to accept the cloud. So cloud will be part of our lives if we want it or not. Some people still insist of not, but it will. IPv6, we will not get rid of IPv4 in our lifetime, but IPv6, you have to learn the concepts unless you can't be secure. It's the most common way of me, for example, when pen testing banks, is just use IPv6 because no one monitors it. So it's an open platform for me to do whatever I want. PowerShell, you can't manage anything in the future unless you know PowerShell. PKI, because people just honestly don't understand how certificates works, and that there's no way of everything nowadays requires signing and certificates. If you don't understand the concepts, you're in a very bad situation. So IPv6, PKI, PowerShell, accept the cloud.
Yeah. So I do thank you, and a big hugs to your family that they lend to you, to me, because the people that listen to us do not know what you're with the family here. So I really appreciate you took your time. So my final sentence is maybe you can add some words to it. You should, to get the latest news, there is only one medium. So if you're not on Twitter.
Yeah, if you're not on Twitter, get on Twitter.
That's it. Thank you. Thank you, Sami Lai.
Thank you very much. Nice being here. Thank you.
Bonus content. Learning Finnish. The basics.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 järjestelmän valvoja.